Welcome to our Saturday simulcast, joined by Tom Dienhart, still in the press box at Notre Dame Stadium, and also Brian Neubert. And after Purdue's 27-13 loss to Notre Dame up in South Bend, I want to thank our sponsor, the Union Club Hotel, and for sponsoring Saturday simulcast and all that they do for us. And also remind you that you can become a subscriber to goldenblack.com. We have free trials almost on every story. We post a link there, so please consider that as well. All right, Tom, you know, 27-13 loss, a competitive game. I know that coaches don't want to talk about that necessarily, but, you know, I'll first ask you any reaction in postgame. Obviously, David Bell, there's been a tweet about him at least up and walking around. That was a scary situation, but what was your reaction, or what did you, when talking to the players and coaches, what was the vibe after the game?
Yeah, you know, we asked Jackson Antrep his thoughts, and obviously he said very scary, you know. Not only is David Bell one of his best friends, but that's one of your teammates, and I think every football player knows the possibility of something like that could always happen to anybody, and I think it reminds you of your vulnerability. And I don't think most human beings don't like to be reminded how vulnerable they are, especially football players. So reality strikes you pretty hard in the face when you see a player prone on the field for that duration and just going off on a cart like that. But again, he got up on his own. He was sitting up on the cart. And we were told in the post game that David was up and walking. And then, of course, Purdue also sent out a tweet that basically said the same thing as well. So from that point of view, I guess things seem positive. Now, Jeff Brohm didn't advance the story at all as far as Bell's condition goes, his long-term prognosis. Bottom line is stay tuned, right? We'll find out more about David Bell, I'm sure, in coming days. But everybody wants him to do better, just a great person, better person than he is a football player, it seems like. And that's saying a lot. You know, just tough guys. First, Xander Horvath. You know, then Corey Trice, who Jeff Brohm said after the game is going to be out a while. He didn't put exact time or a number of weeks on it. But, again, Horvath, Trice, and now maybe David Bell. And the injury bug is already hitting this team hard. They're only three games in. So just tough to see that today. But overall, guys, you know, there were some things to build on here. And I think you would agree, wouldn't you? The performance of the defense today was pretty gosh darn good.
Yeah, Purdue outgained Notre Dame, kept the game in front of them. They just didn't make enough plays at the right time, it seemed to me. Brian, what's your view? Is this and credit to David Bell. He's the only guy, I don't know if he's the only guy in America, but he catches the ball too, hangs on to it in that play. And the one catch he made, of course, by the goal line, one of the great circus catches you're going to see. Not quite as good maybe as that 2019 catch against Indiana, but wow, he's just amazing to watch. But Brian, you know, your evaluation, you know, was this a step forward today, a step sideways? Does Purdue have something to build on after this two-touchdown loss to the Fighting Irish?
I think you take that categorically. I think, you know, for the defense, I think it was a step forward. I think, you know, obviously 27 points is a big number, and Notre Dame easily could have put up more than that because they dropped a bunch of touchdowns. But I think the defense did enough here to give you a chance. And I think they made big plays. I think at the start of the game, you know, that was a great first quarter they played. They just needed help from their offense. The offense just had to reward the defense with points. I think the special teams took probably a bit of a step backwards here. You've got punter questions again all of a sudden, a most unwelcome sight. You made a couple mistakes there. TJ Sheffield fielding the punt inside the five. Yeah. The kickoff straight out of bounds. Things like – not straight out of bounds, but out of bounds. Yeah. They needed After to be better there. But I think what this boils down to is just – I think the offense took a – you know, it's hard to say a step backwards because the level of competition moved up so considerably from those first two games. But they just had to be better than that. You know, I think they started the game 3 or 4 on third down and finished like 4 of 16. They'd been so good in those third and shorts. And obviously, I think Xander Horvath's absence had something to do with that, probably affected their play calling a little bit to a certain extent. but they just couldn't get anything going. And just, you just expected better at this point. The quarterback had been playing really well. Purdue had just been very efficient offensively. Just couldn't do a whole lot of anything. And in that first half, that was sort of it felt like this was trending toward being one of those close blowouts where, you know, you're only down 7 points or whatever it is, but you don't even know if you can score enough for it to matter at the end. And then Purdue comes out in the second half and they look pretty good, you know, on that first drive. You thought maybe that they'd turn the corner a little bit. They didn't turn the corner a little bit. They just got to be better offensively. Purdue's got to outscore people. I mean, the defense is going to give up points and yards this year. You got to be able to win games 31-27, not 17-10.
Yeah. Certainly a factor that, again, yes, Purdue had won the statistical battle, but Notre Dame was in control of this football game really for the most part, certainly after the first quarter. And Purdue only 11-yard gain, or the biggest play on offense the first half, I think, was 11 yards, yeah. and that's a problem.
This also, I mean, something that I think is a really important point to underscore here is Notre Dame gave Purdue every opportunity. They dropped at least 2 touchdowns. It was very similar to Purdue against Oregon State, where Purdue had all those opportunities to, you know, to get in the end zone, and they weren't able to do it, and they let Oregon State kind of hang around a little bit. You know, Purdue was gifted new life a couple of times, and they couldn't get enough going offensively to be able to take advantage of it.
Yeah, that margin for error, you can't drop balls. Purdue had dropped balls. Enter the equation today. We'll find out what the actual number was. Milton Wright had some struggles in that light, though we did have the 1 touchdown reception as well. Tom, and did Coach Jeff Brohm say anything about quarterbacking and the future of that? Did you view that as a necessary change? And certainly Aiden O'Connell came in and chucked it around pretty well, really, in all honesty. Both of his interceptions were off deflections. Anything from post game that caught your attention? And how do you – I'll ask both of you. I'll start with you, Tom. Do we have not a quarterback controversy, but there's a question who starts next week against Illinois?
Well, first, real quick, to Brian's point on third downs, guys. First quarter, Purdue was 3-6 on third downs. The rest of the game, they were 1-10.
Yeah.
So they really took a step back after that quick start. Just 2.3 yards per carry for Purdue running the football. And, guys, big plays. I talked about it before this game. Purdue's not going to beat these guys running 8, 9, 10, 11-play drives. You got to get the chunk plays, and the explosive plays just weren't there today in the quantity that they needed to be, guys. Look at Notre Dame's touchdowns, a 39-yard pass, a 62-yard pass, a 51-yard run. And by and large, Purdue had the handful of big plays, the big catch by Bell to set up the touchdown, and King Drew had a 31-yard run. Alan, Jeff Brohm was asked about the quarterbacks after the game, and really he just said he felt, you know, he's got 2 guys who can play. Kind of the thing we've heard in the past, at any point in time, he's always willing to play multiple quarterbacks. So this wasn't, at least according to his post-game comments, a change that was made out of performance sake. And again, he just thought Aiden O'Connell was a guy who could spark the offense. He did say Jack had been hit a lot and had been under a lot of duress. So take that for what it's worth as well. He was asked, is Jack Plummer still the quarterback moving forward? Jeff Brohm said, yes, he's still the number one quarterback. But he then again, guys, went on to say, as usual, he's always willing to play multiple quarterbacks. He thinks he's got quarterbacks on this team who can help it at any given time. So we've seen this from Jeff Brohm before. We've heard it from him before. There's no quarterback controversy. It's just a case of, you know, if he thinks somebody can spark the offense, he's certainly going to put him in, be it the left guard, the defensive end, or quarterback.
Yeah, Aiden O'Connell did do that, in my view, for the most part, and definitely had some difficult throws that he threw well. And again, both of his interceptions on deflections, and that made a difference as well. Brian, you look at the defense and the defensive front. They Boilermakers start the game with a sack early on, put some pressure on early. I thought the defensive line did some good things. I thought for the most part, I mean, I know Jack Cohn still threw for X number of yards, over 200. You know, for the most part, though, they still made some plays. Jamari Brown made a couple plays into the secondary. How'd you grade out the defense, or as you looked at that on television today, what did you see from that standpoint?
I thought they were good. I thought everything, you know, they were supposed to be coming into the season in terms of the mentality they're playing with, the pressure they want to apply. I thought that was perfectly executed in the first quarter, especially. I mean, they were bringing pressure from all over the place. It was getting there. It was making an impact on the game. I thought it affected Cohen. Obviously, as time went on, either Purdue, you know, kind of normalized a little bit, perhaps that, you know, start of game energy maybe subsided a little bit. Notre Dame adjusted to it, obviously. I don't think you were going to do that for 60 minutes. I don't think anybody thought that first quarter was going to be the whole game. But, you know, it was just a matter of they got you that opportunity to, you know, to put up a quick 14, 17 points, whatever it might have been in that first quarter. If, you know, the offense is able to do that, you know, Notre Dame's playing from behind, maybe they change a little bit. Maybe that gives you a little bit more latitude to take a few more chances on defense, or, you know, throw some different looks out there, whatever it might have been. And it was just a matter of time, I thought, before Notre Dame, you know, hit Purdue where it hurt, with all the pressure they were applying, as aggressive as they were being. And sure enough, it came on that fourth down where they hit the touchdown between OC Brothers and I don't know who the other
Lawrence Johnson.
Okay. And that was kind of the play that, you know, sort of started things in Notre Dame's direction. But also it just came down to the offense, you know, that fourth down and that third down where you're fourth and one and third and one and you can't get a yard on either of those plays. That was just a killer. That swing of the two fourth downs for Purdue, the fourth down and the third down for Purdue and the two fourth downs for Notre Dame. That's where this game swung in Notre Dame's direction. But I think the defense did pretty much everything, you know, you could have asked of them. Now, had Notre Dame caught two of those touchdowns they dropped, we might be seeing an entirely different story here. And that's just what I alluded to before, that you were given some opportunities here that you just did not take advantage of.
You know, guys, that Milton Wright jet sweep on fourth and one where he got tackled for no gain. That was, to me, just here we go again, you know. They try to get fancy instead of being physical, and they still don't get it. And they were up 3-0 at that point, knocking on the doorstep to maybe scoring again, and then they have to turn the ball over on down. So, you know, still, guys, even in the fourth quarter, there was a point where it was a 20-13 ball game, and Purdue had the ball.
Right.
Still could have gone there and down there and tied the game in the fourth quarter. It didn't happen. So, you know, Brian's talked about this already. You know, Notre Dame was begging to get beat, and Purdue just could not make the plays offensively. I feel strong and confident saying the defense played more than well enough to win this game. It was just, again, a lot of the same things we've seen from this offense in recent years up front, not being able to measure up against physical teams, guys, and, you know, they talked about in the post game, this is what it's going to be the rest of the year. There's no more UConn's on the schedule. There's no more Oregon State's on the schedule. These are all Big Ten teams moving forward. They're going to see more defenses and offenses like this. And this is the measuring stick we thought it was going to be. And they've got plenty of film to look at and still plenty of things to obviously work on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brian, I want to ask you, because you and I both watched the game on television. Drew Brees made his debut, it was his second game, but his first one on full broadcast national, I guess, not being on the Peacock, but your thoughts of what you just listening to him and his analysis. I'll let you make your opinion and I'll make mine.
Yeah, he was fantastic. I mean, you know, for as much as everybody talks about Tony Romo being, you know, the next big thing in, you know, color analysis, I thought Brees was kind of right up there, you know, in terms of diagnosing everything that was happening and what might then happen, in terms of explaining things in a way that didn't come off too academic, for lack of a better term. I thought he was great. He seemed very comfortable. He's obviously knowledgeable. I've always thought he would be great at television, just because he's got the personality. He's got the ability to communicate. He's got he's got the knowledge, obviously. I mean, he thinks football as well as, you know, perhaps anybody in the history of the game, maybe not named Peyton Manning or somebody like that, but he's probably right up there with him. I don't know why I use that as an example, but he's perfect for this. And you know, I've always wondered what he'd do after playing, and he could do anything he wants. I mean, he could do anything he wants, business, politics, TV, whatever. I mean, he had every option under the sun as soon as he retired from playing, and you know, he had no bad options, but obviously this was a fantastic one. He's going to be really good at it. He's going to be one of the, he might be one of the all-time greats at this too.
Yeah, and absolutely. And Tommy, you'll have upon further review a chance to watch a little bit that tributes by Bob Greasy and Gary Danielson also. Tom, I know they're telling you to move out. So we're going to move out as well and put a wrap on this Saturday conversation. Saturday simulcast, I should say. And we want to thank our sponsors, the Union Club Hotel, and also remind folks that you can become a member and join us at goldenblack.com. We'll be back next week, probably about the same time, because it's a 3:30 start at Purdue, Illinois. For Brian Newbert and Tom Deanhart, we'll say bid you a good evening and have a great Sunday and rest of the week. And we'll look forward to talking next week after that first Big Ten game in Ross-Ade Stadium.
Have a good weekend.
What's that?
Now for the cannon.
Yep, that's right. Didn't get any bigger than that. All right, guys. Have a good one. Thank you.
Yep.
All righty. Bye-bye.